be sure and tell them Large Marge sent ya.
You know, on the break, you know, we're talking with ghost hunters. We're from Chicago right now, right?
Right.
And naturally, when you're talking with a paranormal investigator from Chicago, you're going to get on the subject of alcohol. I mean, it's just.
I guess.
It's kind of like an elephant sitting in your living room. You just have
you to. Have to
you,
mention.
You have to mention yeah. that there's something. There's an elephant sitting in your living room. We were talking about bootleg whiskey and all this insane stuff and stuff that make you go blind. And I was going to tell you guys something on the break, but I figured
it's all about the hooch.
It's all about the hooch. We're talking about hooch. And apparently you guys have hooch there.
We have hooch here,
but it isn't alcohol. It's a different kind of hooch.
Yeah, completely different.
Yeah, you can make a phone call for it.
We're going to look up the definition of hooch.
We're just curious.
But
while Will's doing that, well, this is Ghostly Talk, by the way.
Yes, and I'm Doug.
And I'm Scott L.
I'm Will.
We'll get that out of the way.
Good.
www.ghostly.com. You know all that stuff. Whatever. You know.
Oh, good. That's the condensed version of the notes.
Hooch has a blog. Hooch.com is a blog.
Well, it's a blog.
I think that might be...
It's some sex diary or something.
That is bad.
It's some sick sex diary.
That is wrong on every possible level.
Yes, it is.
When I was a younger man... This is a great story. You guys are going to die. You guys are going to laugh.
All right.
Let's just say I'm gonna leave all details. I was down in the South, doing some work when I was younger, right? And I came in from doing this work, and you know, down in the South, it's very, very hot. And I came in and I went to the sink, right? And I was gonna get a glass of water, but I saw that there was already a glass with some clear liquid.
That's the stuff I drank.
Oh, no.
Called Hooper's Hooch.
We're gonna pimp some friggin' random alcohol company.
Extreme refreshment.
Oh, great! But I was.
That's it.
I walked up to the sink, and I wanted to get a glass of water. Right. Now I saw that somebody. I thought the people that I was with were being real nice to me because there was already a glass of water sitting there in a clear glass.
Uh-oh.
So I'm like, hey man, all right man.
You were in what state?
No. I'm leaving all that stuff out. All
right.
You're gonna keep it all anonymous, but. So I'm like, well, this looks refreshing. I'm gonna guzzle this thing down, right? So I grab the glass and start guzzling it, right? About maybe two sips into it, I realize that this isn't the clear and refreshing liquid we all know and love that is referred to as water. It was actually what we endearingly refer to as moonshine, man. Okay?
Wow.
Moonshine. I took two sips of this stuff, and I think down on my stomach there was a man that said, okay, everybody out, no waiting, go. My whole body just shut down for a couple of seconds. My eyes closed and water came out of them, which is called tears. And I cried like a little girl. I was in horrible shape. I don't know if any of our listeners have ever tried moonshine before. All I can say about that is there is a rule with moonshine. Don't do it.
I believe it.
Okay. I mean, in my travels, I went to college. I've drank. Like, I know. I've done all this stuff. And I've had, hey, Scott, look what we got tonight. And they got, like, this jar, this mason jar. Well, you know what's in here, Scott? I'm like, what, lighter fluid? What?
Yeah,
you know, like,
pretty
well,
much.
Better. It's moonshine. Oh, yeah, you can light fuel with that, too, right? Just a little piece of advice for our listeners out there. Don't drink moonshine. I had a bad experience with it, and even with the tolerance I have now, I don't think I could ever touch that stuff. It's disgusting.
I will admit it's disgusting, but I've done it a couple times.
I know there's people out there that try to like float apples in and stuff to give it some kind of flavor, right, or whatever. I've heard of. Well, you put an apple in there, and you cut the apple up, and you let it float in there for about 15 years, and it tastes really good. No, it don't work that way.
That's another accent. We just lost everyone that's south of
everybody south of Michigan.
Yeah.
Okay. Sarah, we still
have this stuff at my work right now. It's called Georgia Moon Corn Whiskey. It's in a mason jar. I'm scared of it. Looks like water.
Georgia Moon Corn Whiskey.
Yeah, it looks
That sounds like a bad hangover.
We'll be there next weekend.
It's like the smoker's choice cigarette.
Right away.
It's really a cigarette, but it's got cigarette paper. It's really moonshine. They just call it whiskey.
Yeah, exactly.
Get around that tax and tariff stuff. Sarah, we still have you on the line. We have Sarah.
Yes,
Alex had to step away for...
I'm back.
Oh, Alex is back. Cool. We have Sarah and Alex from West Chicago Paranormal. We were talking before the break, we were talking a little bit about organized crime in Chicago and how, you know, there's a lot of hauntings and stuff like that. I'm just curious if there's any other places you guys have checked out there, any other cemeteries or haunted areas out there in the West Chicago area.
Well, there's actually, like I said, there's plenty of, I mean, cemeteries to investigate. I mean, cemeteries galore out here. A lot of them, Jewish Walheim Cemetery, Woodlawn Cemetery. I mean, every cemetery here has a history to it. And, I mean, if you look hard enough, I mean, I'm sure you'll find ghosts too. So, but, there's plenty of spots. I mean, like you said, Al Capone left his mark on Chicago.
Well, he owned
Chicago. You go anywhere in the world and you mention Chicago, and you're like, oh, Al Capone.
Well, he owned that. He owned Chicago at one time.
He was the unofficial mayor of this place.
Yeah, he was in control of the politics. He was in control of crime control. Right. He bought everybody off.
For some reason, everybody can name Al Capone, but if you say, what is it, Mayor Daley?
Yeah, who?
Huh?
Who's that?
I don't know.
He was actually the mayor during the time.
Yeah.
But Al Capone, he owned that city at
right.
the time. He did leave his mark. And a lot of people, I know there's a lot of people that visit his tombstone out there. It's a really important monument, I think. Even though it was organized crime, I mean, here's my little editorial on Al Capone. I think he was a pretty cool guy, personally. I liked Al Capone. I don't know about you guys over on the other end there in Chicago. But he obviously was a gangster. He was in La Cosa Nostra, let's say. But he did leave his mark in the simple fact that just like somebody like Pablo Escobar, he was a criminal also. He was a drug dealer. But this man gave back to all the people, though. He fed people. He was doing all types of soup kitchens all the time. And he was, like a lot of people say about Al Capone, he was a modern-day Robin Hood. He really was. He stole from the rich and gave to the poor, just like Robin Hood did. Okay, so let me leave Al Capone alone. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I'm going on this discourse. Like, I support all the Cosa Nostra. I'm all about the mob. Thank you. I love this stuff.
My goodness. Well, you know, one of my favorite things is the maritime stories.
Okay.
And I know you guys are in west burbs of Chicago, right? So you're not, like, right on the water or anything. But there's got to be some awful doozies out there. I know that because, you know, Michigan is surrounded by Great Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
Except for when you get down in that Ohio and Indiana part, you know.
Right.
That's where it's not surrounded by the Great Lakes. But other than that, it's surrounded by the Great Lakes. So I pay attention to a lot of the Great Lakes folklore and the Great Lakes, the stories of haunted ships and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What about your area? Do you guys have any local legends about ships coming into the docks at Chicago that perhaps have never really arrived?
Well, I was in the Navy, and we had a training ship down at the... I think it was the Montrose Harbor, and I've heard I haven't seen directly, but I've heard of stories of actually what seemed like ghost ships out on the Great Lakes. There's actually been a lot of disasters. Not a lot of people know this, but I mean, you get into a squall out on the lake, and it's just like being on the ocean.
Mm-hmm. That's
true. You have 14-foot swells. I mean, there's bound to be stories of ships. Being lost on the lakes.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of our most famous in actual Chicago is the Eastland disaster.
Mm-hmm. Yes, good point.
Yeah, I mean, that in itself, I mean, that was probably one of the greatest maritime disasters in Chicago.
What happened?
So, the Eastland was a charter boat back in the turn of the century.
Around
800 employees were actually going to go on an excursion to Michigan for a picnic, company picnic, which is part of the Western Electric company that was out here in Cicero. And apparently the ballast on board the ships wasn't being properly handled. And because of so many people on the dock waving to... to the people on the ship, it kind of unsteadied the ship, and it actually rolled over.
Oh, my God.
800 people were believed to have perished. Many generations.
And man child.
Yeah, many generations in one foul swoop were wiped out. With that, there were so many bodies that some of the buildings in the Chicago area, to mention one, which was the Chicago Naval Armory, which is now the site of Harpo Studios.
Okay.
Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
Oh, that's ironic, huh? Talk about you know, dead brainless souls, and then you got the Oprah Winfrey show going on there. I'll leave my opinion to
what
myself.
Do you think
I'm sorry.
Wait a minute.
Did I say that? Hey, rewind. Rewind. I didn't say anything bad about Oprah Winfrey. Go ahead, guys.
She's a pillar of the art. What's going on over there?
I think they're underwater.
I know. The
Kahoot got them.
She's a pillar of the community over there. She's also, like, I think she's done some amazing work.
Okay, is it true? Okay, is it true that every person living in Chicago loves Oprah Winfrey, guys?
That's quite not true.
You know what? I think she does a lot of good.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't watch her personally on TV. So,
well, you know,
I haven't either.
I don't know. Makeup tips just don't do anything for me. I mean, I have my own makeup regimen, and I don't need her help.
Right.
You know? She does more serious stuff than that. But
all right.
Anyway,
okay.
But that's very interesting, though, that there is that tie-in.
Is there any reported hauntings as a result of this thing, guys?
Oh, yeah.
What now?
Yeah. You go down to where the actual site happened, and people still hear the screams and the cries of the people that actually died there, supposedly.
Wow.
People see figures there on the dock.
Okay.
Wearing turn-of-the-century clothing.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, that's an interesting thing right there. We're talking about in my opinion, that's a catastrophic disaster right there. 800 people being rolled under a ship.
Men, women, and children, including babies.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so sad, too.
Yeah, it's pretty drastic.
That's when you start really diving into the theory, though. I mean, even though it's an unfortunate situation, and don't take me the wrong way, I'd like to hear stories about this because it gets you thinking, right?
Definitely.
Okay.
Right.
800
Well, there
people.
Was another place where that, I don't know for sure if it was used as a makeshift morgue or not, but the Excalibur nightclub in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have said it was used as a makeshift morgue. Other people say not, so it's still up in the air. But the hauntings in that place are just extreme. We're going to be going there shortly to do a little pre-investigation of sorts. So
that's,
kind of looking
I've
forward
never
to that.
Heard
that's those... what they call it now, pre-investigation when you go to a nightclub.
Yeah, pre-investigation.
I like that.
Also, I've never heard those two words put in the same sentence, though, a makeshift morgue.
Oh, yeah, they did that all over Gettysburg. They called them makeshift morgues because pretty much every building there became a makeshift morgue.
Well, yeah, I mean, more than 10
people
died.
And a makeshift hospital. Well, I mean, most of the places ended up being hospitals, but, I mean, you just had so many dying soldiers. Well, same thing there. When you had all these bodies, you can't possibly take care of them in the standard way.
No, obviously not. When are you guys going to check that out?
Probably pretty soon. We're just waiting for to get a date to get in there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to do a pre-investigation of that place?
Right.
Yeah.
And then you're going to actually do the real investigation of the place. That's actually cool, though.
Yeah, we're going to be doing a real one later on. I've actually been talking on and off with members from the TAP, Paranormal Investigation Society.
Yeah, you guys mentioned that.
They sound very interested in it. It's just, you know, organizing schedules and everything. So
now, okay,
I sent them an email on what the hauntings are there and everything. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
If you guys get a chance, that White Noise DVD on the before the actual movie, there's a documentary on EVPs, and they actually do a documentary at the actual Excalibur.
Oh, no kidding! That's where they did that. They did a session at. That was Lisa and Tom Butler from AAEVP. Were they part of that?
Right.
Yeah. I know.
Well, that'll be the best thing on that DVD.
Probably. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. You guys just touched a nerve right there. You shouldn't have mentioned that movie in White Noise. Now Doug's all angry and stuff. Well, you guys mentioned also you're trying to get the TAPS people to come out there.
Right.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing. Now, just to clear the air a little bit, those of you who live under a rock, if you don't know who the TAPS organization is.
The Atlantic, yeah, the Atlantic Paranormal Society.
Yeah.
And their website is the-atlantic-paranormal-society.com.
It's a pretty brutal URL.
Yeah. It's the longest URL on the planet.
But you won't forget it, though, because they are obviously the people that do this show called Ghost Hunters.
Yep, on Sci-Fi. Yeah.
And you guys have been doing some work. Well, you guys have been corresponding back and forth with those guys. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah. Right, Sarah has.
And they may be coming out to work at the Excalibur, like you guys just said.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. I just sent Paula, actually, an email, you know, telling what is going on at the Excalibur, what the key points are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know they're busy investigating right now, so I'm just sitting back and patiently waiting for a reply from Jason and Grant. So. And
those boys are busy, I can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
They are.
I mean, we say,
yes, they do.
You know, people like us say, well, yeah, I've been busy ghost hunting. Well, yeah, I've been busy on the weekends ghost hunting, okay? Those gentlemen are busy every day of the week ghost hunting for, obviously, the show. I mean, these gentlemen, that's what they do now. They are, I think it's safe to say they are the only professional ghost hunters on the planet because that's what they do now. That's their job.
Right.
They,
exactly.
They hit all these places up. Well, it's very cool. You guys are working with them. That's very interesting. I know.
Yes.
We're kind of like, I know us and TAPS are kind of like two boats. Like I said, they keep passing each other in the harbor, and we wave to them and say hi, right? And I think someday we'll probably end up having a little discussion with them on the show here. We're really excited about that.
Maybe eventually.
I think you know they're doing a really great job, and I hope my hope is that they set a standard for this. For this industry as far as ghost hunting, mm-hmm. to bring credibility to it. Because I know there's a lot of shows out there, I'm not going to mention any names, but, you know, they use a lot of unproven methods. We don't deal with Ouija boards or psychics. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just too much room for error of interpretation.
Yeah, and that's understandable, too. Well, yeah, I mean, we've talked about ghost hunters a lot on the show here. And it's the one thing I think that seems to continue as far as opinions go is it's really brought a lot of this stuff out of the table now for just, I don't know, the regular folk. I mean, people who aren't into this sort of thing. I mean, it's making people think, especially with the holiday just came through, along with the show going on. I mean, that's a good thing to ask you guys, too. I mean, you're ghost hunters yourselves. Have you noticed in the last couple of years that there seems to be this increase? There seems to be a lot more awareness of studying the paranormal. Have you guys seen a lot of that also?
Definitely. Websites have been spewing up left and right. So.
Yeah, as far as the Internet's concerned, I mean, it's thriving. It's gigantic right now.
Yeah, TV shows, there's one popping up every... We're working on our own TV show as we speak, so...
Really?
It's going to be... the way I describe it is it's kind of like the opposite of how TAPS does theirs. They focus more on the investigation, and they do a few minutes of analysis, and they tell you what they've found. What we're proposing to do is the opposite,
mm-hmm.
where we'll take the viewer more. It's going to be kind of like a split screen, like, you know, the show 24?
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever saw that. It's going to be something similar to that where we're going to, you know, show clips of the investigation, but we're going to... do more of the evidence portion so people can see exactly what it entails when you're going over evidence.
Mm-hmm.
We'll explain how this is being done, show key parts of the investigation which correlates to the evidence.
Okay.
Side by side on the split screen. So it's going to be a new take, a new direction of a, you know, investigation, so to speak.
Well, yeah, that's
more of a technical aspect of it.
Yeah, you guys are talking more about the nuts and bolts as opposed to just like more of the footage of them walking through the area going, oh, what was that?
Well, right. Like that. This is a really good idea, too, because now it's copyright 2006, the West Chicago Ghost Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, should that idea ever come out, mm-hmm. It's theirs.
It's theirs.
Any producers listening, you know.
And they're from Chicago. You don't want to upset them because they'll break your kneecap.
Right, right.
That's what they say about those people from Chicago.
I'm a medic, so I can fix you up when it's all
done. Oh, that's nice.
Hey, you're just like the U.S. government. That's wonderful. You go and you destroy places, and then you fix them up. That's so cool. You're like a little mini U.S. government. I love it. That's beautiful. Guys, unfortunately, we have to make way for our next guest, but I have to say thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
We've learned a lot. It's really great to meet you guys, too. And obviously, well, what's going to happen is you guys agree to come on here and put up with us for an hour. So what we do is we put your link up on the homepage of our site. So we're going to head you guys up there forever.
Oh,
That's how it works.
Oh, wow. Yep.
So
all right.
That's how we do that. And we thank you guys for coming on the show. It was really cool to talk
all
to
right.
you.
All right. Well,
feel free to contact us if you ever have any questions about Chicago.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank
great
you.
Guys. Thank you very much. All right. Have a good
thank
night, guys.
You.
See you later.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Nice people.
That was
very
awesome.
Cool. Very cool to talk to those guys. It was just a chance meeting this week. That's all it was. And luckily we had this outlet where we go, hey, you know what? You're a ghost hunter. And if you're not from around
we're
here.
We're a ghost show.
We're a ghost show.
Yeah.
So why don't we have you come on and talk about ghosts?
I like that.
Is that an amazing concept or what, man? It's very cool. No, it was really cool to talk to those guys and learn a few things about Chicago and what they have going on out there. And apparently they're very busy themselves. They're working on their own show.
I think that's amazing. And that's that I want to see more of that kind of stuff go on.
Well, yeah, totally. You know, and people always ask us, too. They're like, so, guys, when's your best of album coming out? And we're like, huh? What are you talking about? People think
there hasn't been any yet.
There
Sorry.
Hasn't been any yeah. good, good, I don't think. Yeah.
It would be all the guests, and it would have none of us in it.
Yeah, it would just be all guests and us going, mm-hmm.
Our
yeah.
guests, our field reporters, our phone folks, but yeah. Not us.
Or when's your DVD coming out? What are we going to tape? Us sitting here talking on microphones?
Well, they do that with the well, we don't have any... You know.
Well, we always talk about doing like a reality show kind of thing where we'd have like that cutaway with like you sitting in front of like a sea, like the water coming
right,
in.
Right.
And you're like, you know, you get your arm leaned up on like a bar and you're going, yeah, I don't know about that Scott L. guy. I'm just really getting tired of his attitude. I think we're going to have to vote him off pretty soon. I mean, we've talked about doing something like that where we like go on a ghost hunt and be like, get really dramatic about it. Like, no, it's right there. Well, no, it isn't. It's not. It's right there. Well, no, I just can't work with you anymore. Then storm out of the room, and then, you know, we all stand there like, you know, what's going on? And then we discuss about, talk about you behind your back when you're out of the room. And then the
of
camera
course.
Goes to you, like I said, and then you're in front, all of a sudden you're in front of the sea, and you're next to a little bar drinking a Mai Tai.
For some reason, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, that's our DVD. That's what we're going to do, I think.
I think that would be great.
Well, all these other people are like, well, haunted...
Right.
Zimbabwe or whatever, you know. Here's the DVD in Haunted Zimbabwe. Apparently, it's easy to make DVDs now. I don't know, because everybody seems to have their own DVD, which is really cool. Don't get me wrong. But I think
I think it started with the Missouri Ghosts.
Yeah.
I mean, they sent us
their DVD.
They're
cutting their own stuff.
Amazing.
Yeah, they're cutting their own stuff, and that's really cool.
But it's nothing like this.
No.
That's a really good idea.
Well, no, and it's great to see that people are actually putting the time in to do stuff like that.
I'll have to dig the Death Squad out for that DVD.
Do you still have it?
Yeah, it's behind the garage.
Oh, it is? It's not,
yes.
Well, we haven't had the official ceremony
right, the
yet.
The ceremony has not happened.
We'll have to say goodbye to the Death Squad, because we discussed that last week a little bit about, you know, how we're going to see this car off. I mean, it really has become a central character
talk.
Of Ghostly Talk in the saga of this radio show.
Viking funeral.
Viking funeral.
Well, yeah, you'll be the MC for that, man. You'll have your that was one of Will's old school nicknames. Was it the NLMF? the Nordic looking mother
mayhem.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. That's what we call them. So we'll get you the big spike, the big horn hat, and you'll say whatever, you know.
Just so you know, when we were down in Cincinnati, it was actually Sharonville, which is just north of Cincinnati.
Sharon. Yeah.
And
sorry, I had to say that.
And there's signs everywhere. You're in Viking country.
Oh, really?
And that's because the...
Led Zeppelin jumps out, they start playing Immigrant Song, and yeah, that's great.
No, I think it's because it's the local high school or something.
Oh, okay.
They're the Vikings.
Well, that's beautiful.
So, yeah, and I, of course, had forgotten my Viking helmet,
mm-hmm.
and if I had brought it, it would have been not accessible, because I can't tell you the vehicle yet, but it would have not been accessible from the front seat.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't have possibly...
I'm just pushing for 9 p.m. now. I just can't wait to get out there. Maybe I'll go out there on break. And go, okay, I saw it. I
played two
it.
Long breaks in a row.
I touched it. Let's take a quick break. I have coming up next. Check this out.
Okay.
This is a
surprise to me. I wasn't supposed to be here. So.
Well, yeah, everything's a surprise to you right now.
Nobody emailed me. I got no memos. Everyone's like, oh, he's not going to be here.
We took you off the distro list.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Corporate said pull him off. I'm like, well, hey,
that
look,
that.
He's not quitting. They're like, we don't care. Pull him off. We don't care.
He gets no schedules for the weeks he says he needs off.
Coming up next, we have the Reverend Karen E. Herrick.
Excellent.
And, well, we'll get into the nuts and bolts of that, too. But we're going to be talking about some pretty interesting things here tonight that have to do with real life and the afterlife.
Perfect.
Let's take a quick break, Will. I am Scott L.
I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And this is Ghostly Talk.
Heidi Hollis, and I think Doug and Scott are right. That is when Doug stops flirting and Scott stops coughing up hairballs in my ear.
From the makers of Hooked on Phonics, America's number one learn-to-read program, and the producers of The Exorcist, comes an all-new product for that special young someone in your life who is possessed by Satan. It's Hooked on Demonics. You'll finally be able to translate what your special little possessed one has been trying to tell you for so long.
Here we thought our son had laryngitis. We didn't know what he was saying. We couldn't believe he was actually just possessed by the Dark One.
His soul is mine, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Thanks, Hooked on Demonics.
Well, my daughter had been projectile vomiting green stuff for an entire week. I thought she was just trying to get out of school. You know these kids today. Hooked on Demonics sure worked for us.
Stop wasting money on priests and their unholy hourly rates.
That will be $23,000, my child. And remember, all of God's glory does not accept American Express.
With the low price of $666, there's no need to hesitate. Act now. Order online.
Good night, Mother.
Lewis of GroundZeroRadio.com, and you are listening to Ghostly Talk, and I know why, because the voices told me to.
That was totally wicked!
That was interesting, back from break music. Yeah, I like that.
There's a technical term for that. I don't know what they call it, but we call it back from break music.
I call it back from break music, yeah.
We're like, hey, that sounds like the back from break music. Let's go back on the air.
We better put our headphones on.
Yeah, we better, sound official again. This is not very much different around here in this studio.
Right.
This is Ghost to Talk. I'm Scott Allen.
And I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And we do have on the air, or on the phone, or whatever. Mm-hmm. She's somewhere around here. She's hiding. I don't know what's
going on. She was in my head earlier.
She was in your head earlier?
Yeah,
you
heard
her too, huh?
Yeah, I heard that voice.
I thought it was just me.
No, there's a real guest.
I'm like, okay, look, the acid thing was like years ago.
Yeah, that was like, ooh.
It was years ago. I don't know why I'm still having flashbacks.
Before you were born.
Before I was born,
yeah. Right.
I blame my parents.
Ooh, now you're going to get a call.
The phone will be ringing any time. Yeah, bring down acid for it. You're coming right now. You okay? You all right? Okay, Doug's hyperventilating.
I haven't had a fun show like this in a long time.
Okay,
I needed this show. Thank you.
Okay, you're breathing heavily over there, bro. Somebody give him his inhaler.
Good.
Give Doug
I'm
his inhaler. All right. Here we go. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Reverend. Oh, I'm sorry. Ooh, I said it, Karen. I'm sorry.
Karen, that's okay.
Okay, all right. Let's try this again.
Okay.
Karen E. Herrick is the founder and director of the Center for Children of Alcoholics Incorporated in Red Bank, New Jersey, and has held numerous positions pursuant to treating of alcoholics and their families. She is certified in transpersonal psychology and spirituality from the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology and has studied spiritual emergence and syndromes. Karen Herrick is an ordained interfaith minister and studied comparative religions, dimensions of psychology, and spiritual healing and counseling at the New Seminary in New York City. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
We have a lot to cover here, I think, tonight, because the work you do, from what I understand, from what I've gathered, the reading I've done, is you really study spiritual experiences. Am I correct?
Yes, I'm doing it for my PhD in spiritual psychology.
Okay. I didn't even know they had a PhD for that. It's amazing. I didn't know that.
Well, I'm taking it at Union Institute and University in Cincinnati, and you can define your own PhD, once you get it approved.
Okay.
And so that's why I'm going there, because it's very difficult to find a PhD in defining spiritual experiences.
But
what I'm hoping to teach other therapists is the difference between a spiritual experience and mental illness.
Well, that's interesting. I mean,
just talking about that on a different show, on the same show, on Ghost of
On this show, on a different...
Before. First of all, you work with children?
I started my business over 20 years ago, and it's called the Center for Children of Alcoholics. Now I work with adults. I work with children when they bring them to me, but I did start years ago and working mainly with alcoholics, and... now I work with people from dysfunctional homes, and I still work with some alcoholics and addicts, but mostly with people in transition and change and working with grief and disassociation. And I have about maybe 30% of people that come from alcoholic families, or now they're called dysfunctional families mainly, where their emotional needs weren't met.
Okay. Well, what would define that then? I'm just curious. I mean, we're talking about emotional needs here, which would create this breach.
It used to be that it was an alcoholic family, but it's now, it could be any type of family where your parents were busy fighting or gambling or maybe working or just having different problems where they weren't meeting your emotional needs.
Okay. And as far as the emotional needs go, I mean, I'm just curious as far as what that entails.
Well, they weren't taking care of you, and so... you know, we used to say in an alcoholic family, you weren't having your they weren't listening to your feelings. You weren't able to trust them because their care wasn't consistent, and they weren't listening to you. So you were kind of left out there. And one of the things about spiritual experiences, maybe you were disassociating a lot or daydreaming.
Uh-huh.
And we found that if you were doing that, then in adulthood you have the tendency to disassociate and maybe have a near-death experience.
Oh, okay.
In fact, Kenneth Ring, who wrote the book The Omega Project, found just that. He wanted to see why this group of people had near-death experiences and that group didn't. And in his study, the only variable that he found was that certain people had, the people that had the near-death experiences, had trauma in their childhoods, and they had the ability to disassociate because of that trauma. And so for that reason, they had near-death experiences.
Well, yeah, and that's what we hear from a lot of people. I've come in contact with people like that where this idea of disassociation, where they just shut down more or less. They just block that out completely and they forget about it.
That's right.
I've met a lot of people in that situation where they grew up in a family similar to what you're talking about, alcoholics type family, just an abusive relationship. As a matter of fact, I talked to a gentleman this week who I grew up with him. We were children together, and I hadn't seen him in the better part of 12 years. And
right.
We happened to just come in contact again, and he is a completely different person now. It's amazing how much this gentleman's changed because, I mean, he has animosity towards his parents now. And I remember as a child, it was like his parents, the sun rose and set above their heads more or less. And now it's like a lot of things I know I saw happen when I came to that house, for example. They were things that I would not acknowledge because it wasn't my place to acknowledge them as a child, so to say. But
right.
I knew in my heart that they didn't happen in my house. Luckily, I got really cool parents and they didn't do stuff like that. They were good
right.
parents. But I knew in my heart when I saw these things happen that they were wrong. They shouldn't be happening. This man shouldn't be treating this woman like this. This man shouldn't be treating his children like this.
Right.
And
well,
I know
that's a dysfunctional home.
Yeah, it's a dysfunctional home, exactly like you said. And now I can see the difference. I mean, I didn't like lay him down on a couch and say, okay, I want you to tell me all of your innermost feelings and stuff like that. But I can tell the difference where he's shut a lot of this stuff out now, and he just kind of like he's like. He won't acknowledge it. I know one of the questions I asked him was just that. Hey, how's your parents doing? And he's like, well, you know, my mother passed away. I'm like, well, my God, I'm so sorry to hear that. My God, my love to your family. He's like, yep, we had some good times. That's all he said. That's all he said to me. And I'm like, I knew right there, you know. And I'm not even trained in this type of thing. But I knew that there was a problem right there. I knew that there was something wrong. So more or less,
it's called denial or shutting down.
Yeah, people disassociate themselves from these things.
That's right.
What's the? I mean, I'm just curious about the mechanics behind that too. Why would somebody, as opposed to trying to like face it and go, "Hey, look, this is wrong. What are you guys doing to me? Cut this out." Why do they disassociate themselves? Why? I mean, why is this one of those things that happened the way it does? Are you following what I'm saying?
Yes. Well, you would disassociate because, number one, your parents don't want to talk about it, and they tell you to, you know, go out and play or, you know, avoid it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you learn to avoid it because it's easier to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't have to feel the pain if you avoid it.
Yeah, and that's the M.O., Doug. Do you agree with me on this? I mean, that's the M.O. for a lot of people.
Well, what I'm thinking now is that in society as it is now, as opposed to when you and I were growing up, it makes it actually easier to have a dysfunctional family because of things. There's so many distractions. There's the video games and the TV with 100 million channels, and even radio now, you get it off the satellite and it has a million channels.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is like everything except for sitting down at the table and talking and eating with your family.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know. They want you to do all these other things now.
There's a million different time killers out there now. There's
right.
millions of ways.
And the internet kill. Even. Oops. I'm on the internet. Oops.
But no, that's the thing is, I mean, I know growing up myself as a child, I mean, that was one of my ways, Karen, of shutting down, so to say. I mean, I didn't, every family, you're going to have arguments. It just happens.
That's normal.
Yeah.
Right.
When you live in the same house with certain people for 18, 25 years, whatever it may be, chances are you're going to bump heads here and there. It's just going to happen. I don't care who you live with.
Well, that's right. But see, in a normal family, we would hope that you would well, it's not true because normal is dysfunction. So in an abnormal family, we would talk things through. That's how you would work things out. The kids would see that you could talk things through.
Mm-hmm.
But when you disassociate, then you get immediate gratification from these games or from disassociating or going out to play and avoiding it.
Yeah, exactly. I know, like I said, one of the things I used to do when I'd have a disagreement with one of my parents was I'd go straight to my room,
right,
put on my headphones, turn them up to 11, or whatever I was listening to, and just phase out. And then, you know, it would be like the after-school special. My dad or my mom would walk in there after, you know, hello, and they'd smack me to wake me up because I was, like, you know, listening to music. And they go, hey, look, man, you know, this is the reason I got mad at you, and here's the deal, man. You can't do that kind of stuff. You got to chill out or whatever the deal was.
Right.
So they faced up to it. They didn't just let me go. They didn't leave me with no closure. And, hey, I'm happy about that. I guess I'm a lucky kid. I was a lucky kid. I had that closure. We faced up to the issue. We looked it right in the eye and said, this is what you're doing wrong. You need to fix that.
Right.
I know a lot of families out there, and like Doug said, the biggest point you made right there was just that, Doug. There's a lot more things nowadays to just to phase out to, video games, the internet.
Yeah, the society now has all these gizmos and things to alleviate or to make it easy not to deal with other people.
Exactly. And
that's true. But there are some people that do want to deal with it, so they do come in for therapy. Maybe they're brought in by another person, or they're sent in by their boss, or they get in trouble with the police, and then probation sends them to me.
Mm-hmm.
But for various reasons, they come in, and they do handle the situation then, usually, because they're, you know, they're forced to, and they develop a relationship with me, and then we work through it.
Well, that's a question I have about that, too. Like, you just made an interesting point. These people may get into some problems later in life. They may break the law, according to our law and our Constitution, and they're sent to you.
Mm-hmm. And then you use the crisis as an opportunity.
Okay, all right, because I'm thinking, you know, I've always known that there's any problem you have. I mean, I brag about it all the time. I quit biting my nails. That's my big thing, right? Big, huge thing I got over in life right there. Now, very minute to most people, but it was huge for me.
Stop biting your nails.
Well, one day I just said, look, I got to stop doing this. I got to cut this out. This makes my fingers hurt. It's gross. It's disgusting. I can't do this no more. This is just terrible. So I wanted to quit. I wanted to stop doing that. I really had the feeling. Now, as opposed to smoking, okay, where I keep trying to quit smoking, but I don't want to. I enjoy it. I really enjoy smoking, right? Now, if somebody's sent to you, for example, and they have these issues that they have not dealt with that make them angry or whatever it is, but if they're forced into that situation, do they always really want to be helped? Do they really want to face up to that? I mean, that's what the thing is. If they're being forced into it, is their heart in it? That's my question.
Well, their heart may not be in it, but, you know, if they have to keep their job by doing it, then they are motivated on some level to do it.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Well, that, and I think that if they're in an environment with somebody such as Karen, and they see that, hey, you know, it doesn't have to be the way it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's talking about, you know, all this, these things that can be. I don't have to be angry. I don't have to be nervous. I don't mm-hmm. have to be withdrawn. I don't have to go out and prove something by doing something illegal. You know, I can just be me for a change.
Yeah.
I think they might be drawn to that as well.
And we talk about it, you know, and we decide, you know, together, you know, what the benefit would be for them.
Well, yeah, you know, and one thing I've learned, and I've thrown this to people a lot, you know, and I'm no psychotherapist by any means, but for some reason people, and I know Doug's in the same boat I am, people seem to come to us and go, well, you're an internet talk radio show host. You know something. Tell me. Help me with this. And we're like, you know. But one thing I always tell people, one thing I tell people is, you know, well, Scott, you know, what would you do? And people that are in the situation that you're talking about, people that break the law, people that might have a problem with substance abuse, people that have all these issues going on in their head. And I always ask them the same question. What are you doing right now that's making your life better? Is what you're doing making you a happy person? Really look at this for a second. Think about this for a second. What are you doing with yourself to make you a better person in your eyes? And a lot of times they'll look at it and go, hey, man, you know, I guess like knocking over that drugstore last week really didn't make my life any better because now I'm freaking out about getting caught by the cops.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that's a good question.
And it's easy, you know, and it's like anything I tell people nowadays. My biggest problem with most people, whether they have legitimate mental problems or not, is everybody seems to think, about as far as their nose comes out of their fate, as far as long-term thinking.
I've seen that so much, so often nowadays.
And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people have legitimate reasons for it, and I know there's some people out there like, look, I'm living paycheck to paycheck. I have to live this way. But there are people, like I just said, a good example. You go and knock over a drugstore because you need money right now. But now for the next year and a half, you're going to be chased by the cops. As far as I'm sorry, go ahead, Karen.
I think sometimes, you know, there's a saying that they don't have common sense because it isn't so common.
Well, God, oh my God. Wow.
Yeah, that's true. Karen, where does spirituality come into it?
Well, spirituality is the final stage of development sometimes for people, that they realize that everything is connected in the end. And they do develop a faith because becoming a wounded healer, you know, with their wounds and as they gradually develop a healing of those wounds, then they want to help other people. Mm-hmm. And they want to use their faith and their experience to go out there. And they just naturally become like you guys are, sounds like a natural helper, like a bartender is a natural helper or a hairdresser, you know?
Yeah, 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 exactly.
And then once they have developed some wisdom, they want to do that too. And they do develop some kind of faith. And I also ask them too, do you believe in God? Like when they come in, I do some type of a spiritual assessment. Maybe I just ask a question. And many times they'll say, I was brought up Catholic or I was brought up Jewish or Baptist, whatever, but I don't go to church, you know, and they don't want to talk about going to church. Okay, well, I don't believe in God, but I believe in nature, mm-hmm. you know. And so I just write that down, and then eventually as we're talking, getting to know each other, I kind of build on that a little bit. And so I develop give them some kind of a faith along with whatever we're talking about.
Okay.
And maybe have them walk or if they believe in nature and kind of build on that a little bit.
Okay.
So then they do want to, or they naturally develop some kind of a spirituality. Now, when we talk about that, what is spirituality? Like my definition of a spiritual experience is a relationship between a person and a higher being and has a quality that goes beyond a specific religious affiliation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really an individual experience.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if you saw the Newsweek issue September 5th, but it was devoted to spirituality in America.
Mm-hmm.
And it talked about how people in America really want to have a spiritual experience. I mean, they're looking for this, some kind of a meaningful experience. And I think most people are. And a lot of people that come to me, too, are really in emotional agony. Like they're asking, why me, God? Why do I have this problem?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't really see that they've caused it. You know, they really feel like a victim. So spirituality comes in the final stages, I think. Or sometimes they come in and they really have had a spiritual experience. I'll tell you a story of a young man who came in, and he was about 29 years of age, and he lived in an alcoholic family. His father was alcoholic, and he had just broken up with his girlfriend of several years, and he heard that I help people with relationships.
Mm.
And he was very frightened when he came in, and I asked if his father, you know, if he was frightened of his dad, and he said no, his father wasn't physically abusive or anything. And so I took an assessment, and then I said, you know, you are very scared, and hopefully the next time you come, you won't be as frightened of me. So when he came in the second time, he still was. And so I said, you know, I think there's something you're not telling me, because you have a great deal of fear. And he said, well, there was this one thing that had happened, and he had told his priest about it, and his priest had told him never to tell anybody.
Mm.
And I said, well, you're going to have to trust me if you're going to work on this relationship problem, so you need to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, one night he was in the kitchen with his father, and his father was drunk, and they were fighting, which is normal in an alcoholic family.
Mm-hmm.
And he said his father never has been abusive, but this one night he picked up this knife and he threw it at him.
Oh, my God.
And he said, they always give you this sentence when they're going to tell you about a spiritual experience. He said, I don't have the words to explain this to you, and you're going to think I'm crazy when I do,
mm-hmm.
but something like a sheet of plexiglass came down in front of me, and the knife bounced off of it. And I said, oh, I said, that's a type of a spiritual experience. And he said, well, I went to my priest and I told him, and he told me never to tell us another soul that had happened and to forget it. So I said, well, can you forget it? He said, no. And I said, no, you can't, because I said, you can't forget something like that. And I said, number one, we can almost guarantee that your priest has never had a spiritual experience. But I said, he really was trying to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, now, you didn't come to me for this, and you're kind of young, and so it's going to take you, you know, many years probably to figure out what did happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but William James in the early 1900s wrote a book about the varieties of religious experience, and I'm going to give you the name of that book, and
okay.
you can buy it. And, you know, eventually someday read it and decide about different types of religious experiences. I said, but that's what you had. And lots of people have had different types of things like this happen to them, and they're afraid that they're crazy, and they're afraid to talk about it to other people. So you really should be discerning about who you speak to. But there are different types of people who have had angel experiences or seen ghosts, and, you know, they don't talk about it to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you've had a type of experience now, that where you can talk about, you know, just certain people,
mm-hmm.
and it's okay. And I said, and I'm qualified to tell you whether you're crazy, and you're not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then he could relax, you know, and his whole body just kind of let go in the chair, and now we could start talking about the relationship.
Well, that's the, you know, and this ties hand in hand with our field of study, the primary field of study we do here on Ghostly Talk, and that's ghost hunting. Because
okay.
we deal with the same exact people, not, you know, people with big, massive problems like this, but people
right.
that have had, I don't, maybe they are spiritual experiences. Maybe they have seen a ghost. Maybe,
right.
they, I mean, one or the other, okay, fine. But we, I mean, every there isn't a week or sometimes a day that goes by that we don't come in contact with someone that find out what we do, for example, and say, hey, you know, and like you just said, the funny thing, I giggled a little bit when you said that. You're like, you know, this is what you know. Somebody's going to tell you something really off the wall. They're going to say, you know, this is going to sound crazy. I know. And
right.
I really don't know how to tell you.
I don't really know how to tell you. I can't put this into words.
I'm going
to
try. Yeah.
I'm going to try. We get the exact same thing where people are like, look, I was laying in bed one night, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden my grandmother just come walking up to the bed and sat down and looked at me for a few minutes. That's just an example, right?
Right.
And she's been dead for like 25 years. She could not have been there. It's impossible. And they're nervous. They're scared, you know. I guess we have some type of credibility here. I don't know what it is, but they will feel more comfortable telling us that. And once they let it out of their system, they're like, you know, so then they say, well, am I nuts? Am I crazy? What do you think? And we're like, no, you're not crazy at all.
We've heard it over and over.
We've heard it over and over again. And statistically speaking, you know, I believe you. Okay, that's totally cool. So don't worry about it. It's the same thing that seems to apply in the situation when you're treating, when you were treating this gentleman, for example. He was scared. He was told by an authority figure when he was younger to not repeat this, somebody that he probably looked up to and respected, and he listened to what that person had to say like he would listen to his parents or anybody in authority like that. And until you came into his life and you guys sat down and discussed it, he was afraid to tell us to anybody. That's why he was scared, it seems. That makes perfect sense as far as...
Because he was going to sit here and try to act like he wasn't crazy, whatever that meant to him,
mm-hmm.
while he was going to tell me about this relationship problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to, you know, nip that in the bud that he could just get more relaxed with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that seems like you have to break down those barriers before you can make any type of progress with a person, too, in a situation like that. You can't have that inhibition like you had, obviously, with this gentleman. And that's how you break new ground with people is once you get past. It's what I guess you could call an icebreaker.
Yes, right.
An icebreaker. I hate the term, but it does make sense because you are breaking the ice. You're getting down. And then you're getting into the water of the situation and finding out what's really going on there. Spiritual experiences, though, of that sort, and it's interesting, you know, as far as the dynamics of what happened to this gentleman, for example. What I want to ask you is, we're going to take a break here in a second. I want to discuss this situation, if it's okay, as far as, I mean, I don't want to go into, like, personal details or anything like that, but you said that there was, like, a sheet of plexiglass that came down, and that was very interesting to myself and Doug. I know he's sitting here just in...
Well, I classify that as a physical phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So something like a sheet of plexiglass. He said it wasn't a sheet, but I would assume it was a force field of some kind.
Okay. That's
right.
Very
but
cool.
Something actually physically
stopped that knife.
Stopped that knife and or changed its direction to go from at him or toward him,
in him.
To down to the floor.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
That's right.
And that I call a physical phenomenon.
Now, I want to talk about that a little bit more. Is that okay, Karen?
Oh, sure. Sure.
Cool. Let's take a quick break, though, all right? And we'll talk more about this on the other side of the break. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And we'll be right back.